Okay, so good morning. This is good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is the NCSG policy meeting, and my name is Robin Gross, as you know. Okay, so our discussion agenda today is pretty short. There's not a lot of issues before the council to vote on this week or this month, so it's kind of a lighter agenda. But the first issue is the registrar agreement amendments and the law enforcement agency pressure, and following up on the letter that was drafted to be sent to the privacy commissioners and the data retention officers. The second issue is our new GTLD issues. We're still talking about special privileges for certain IGOs. There's still some questions about the URS summit. The third issue on the agenda is consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. I believe Wendy has drafted a letter that we can send to the consumer metrics on consumer metrics on trust. She's put that forward to the NCSG policy committee, so we should talk about that. And then we can go over the agenda for the GNSO council meeting tomorrow and see what I don't believe there are any votes, but just a quick review to see what we need to be paying attention to and focusing on. Anything else? Okay. So then let's get started. The first issue, the registrar agreement amendments, law enforcement agency pressure. Where were we just? Prague. In Prague, we had Rob Hall of the Registrar constituency come and speak to us and give us a little bit more background and information about the negotiations going on between the registrars and law enforcement on making changes to the registrar agreement. And that was very helpful. And one of the things that came out of that was a suggestion that we get some more privacy commissioners and data retention officers involved in paying attention to the policies that ICANN is setting and working on. So I think it was Wendy that drafted a great letter that we could send to the privacy commissioners and data retention officers to ask them to take a look at the agreement. And I just wanted to check and see make sure that letter was sent and who sent it and who was it sent to, and you know, just I want to keep track of that. So does anyone have any information on that?
This is Aubrey. I don't have any information. First of all, it was a group drafting. I think Wendy had a lot to do with it, but I think it was a group drafted thing.
Great.
I don't know. I haven't sent it, I don't think, to anyone. I don't know if anyone sent it to, you know, NTIA, et cetera. I certainly didn't want to send a duplicate when I was never able to find out if anyone had already sent it to them. So that remains unknown. And I thought somebody was tracking it, but then I never figured out who was tracking it.
Well, I'm trying to track it.
Well, okay.
Yeah, this is David. Just I think actually the drafting, I think the first draft was actually done by Kim Heitman. But certainly Wendy and a whole bunch of other people were involved in that drafting session. I know that I'm supposed to send it to Australian privacy commissioners and haven't, but the question is, has anyone sent it? Most important question is probably, has anyone sent it to the Article 29 working group?
Well, I'm beginning to feel like maybe it hasn't been sent, so we need to... We need to do that. The letter was written. Was it written from you as the chair, David? Should you be the one to send this?
Yeah, I think it was written from me as the chair.
Okay, so we should get that list of all the privacy commissioners and data retention officers that we need to send that to, like in the next day or so, and get that sent off to them, including Article 29.
Yeah. I know Joy has definitely sent it to some people, but I don't know who.
Sent it to some people. Okay.
This is Aubrey again. I mean, yeah, it was signed by David, but I think the rest of us were able to just send it sort of, this is a letter, we wanted to make sure you saw it, you know, using any personal connections we had. And then, of course, you know, finding other ways to get it distributed, you know, I think posting it and tweeting it, you know, calling all data privacy may not be a bad idea either. That the letter is there, it's from NCUC, signed by its chair, and for those people we haven't reached personally. So, for example, I was wondering whether I should send it to, you know, we had that conversation with Fiona and Larry at the table where they told us they were now taking responsibility for privacy for the administration.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if anybody sent it to them yet. You know?
Right.
So they definitely should be sent it. And then perhaps David doing the tweet as once we've got it posted somewhere. You know, David doing the tweet since he's the author, or one of us doing the tweet. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
To make sure that it gets a wider audience.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tweet and retweet and, you know.
Yeah, me too. I'll retweet if I don't tweet.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we should just really need to go back to the group and find out who sent it and to whom and so I can spend some cycles on this week because I really want to make sure we've got this, you know, going. So I don't mind trying to get that tracked.
And I have an informal enough relationship with Fiona to send it, even if someone else has already sent it. You know, because I can send it semi-informally saying, I don't know if this already got sent to you, but I wanted to make sure you saw it kind of note.
That would be terrific.
Right. And that way I don't worry about duplicating some other's work. I'm just continuing my friendly relationship.
Right. Okay. Was there any other thoughts on this issue, what we need to do for this one? Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, as long as even if it's just the NTIA and the Article 29 people are the ones who know about it, that should make a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and the EU Commission, Privacy Commission, and also the German Privacy Commission. I remember Monica was telling us that they had already, you know, the German government privacy Commissioner had already issued some kind of a statement that it was not in compliance, but it's all in German. And she's going to send that to me, but I haven't gotten it yet, so I'll follow up with her, too, and see about getting that opinion from the German government.
Yeah, but the Germans are part of the Article 29.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else on this one, or should we move on to the new GTLDs?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, so then let's. The first thing here are the new special privileges for IGOs and the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee. And Aubrey, you're in that working group, are you not? Can you give us a little update, if so? What's going on in there?
The Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
The Olympic Committee. The Olympic Committee. Yeah. At the moment, what we're trying to get through is, I guess, a set of questions, and I sent you a first. I sent the NCSG list, the first cut at them. Since then, Chuck has started a more involved set of questions to be sent to the various constituencies, et cetera, on trying to find, you know, where the consensus point is for this particular group on it, on the answer. So, as you can probably see, even from the ones I sent, we're no longer working on the basis of it's all yes or we're going to hurt the feelings of the GAC. There's various answers that, you know, range from we need some research on this, on what the harms actually are, the protections that exist are probably good enough, let's actually see what happens before we do something. There's a PDP, let's do it all within the PDP, you know. Then there's Red Cross insisting that, and no, it's still essential for them because, you know, and they get a certain amount of support. And then there's the International Olympic Committee that I think is getting less support all the time. And so there's also the thought of, well, hell, you know, we really don't believe in the special protection, but Red Cross with your, you know, with your Geneva Convention and the fact that you have the power to say to Syria, this is now a civil war, and under the Geneva Convention, maybe you are special, I don't know, but you're certainly not the Olympic Committee. So, I mean, there's a lot of discussion going on. I think there's going to be more feedback requested from the constituencies and the stakeholder groups. And I'd be really surprised if this committee came to consensus on the giving both of them protection. I'd be a little less surprised if it recommended giving Red Cross protection. But I tend to think we're not going to recommend protection. But obviously, I don't know. And I'll probably miss the next meeting, though I'm not sure.
Do we have many people in that group? Are you the only one at this point? I know Constantinos was before, but...
Constantinos dropped out. Joy dropped out. Mary has joined, and Wolfgang is still in it and participates, you know, variably.
Mm-hmm. Do we need more people in there? I mean, is it pretty much, you know, stacked with the lobbyists for these organizations? And if we just had more bodies in the room, we could, you know, have more of an effect?
I mean, obviously, if more want to get involved, fine. But I think some of us would probably drop out if more got involved. You know, I'd say, oh, okay, it's taken care of now. I don't need to be here. I know that's what would race through my mind if. I think we've got three periodic voices. None of our voices are in favor of Olympic Committee. Some of us are more sympathetic to Red Cross than not, though still not all that willing to jump at giving protection. Mostly we're lining behind Thomas on the, you know, let's wait and see, show us the harm, what are we going on about? I think what would be good is when questions come out for constituency and stakeholder groups, the constituency and stakeholder group were to actually answer so that we're not quite talking out, you know, even if there's a separate MPOC in NCUC. MPOC participates in the meeting simply because the two lobbyists are them. I mean, Red Cross and, well, no, IOC doesn't belong to them, but it does, even if we don't let them join, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're NPOC members. They're not NCSG members, but they are, NPOC let them join.
Yeah, but technically they're not allowed to, but that's beside the point.
That's true.
They're allowed to be observers, and you know, so let's call them observers, and that's fine, you know. They're observers in NPOC, and that's good enough. At this point, I don't think us ganging up more people would make a difference.
Okay, that's good to know. And is this group going to morph into the discussion on rights generally for IGOs or second level protections, or are those entirely different working groups?
I don't think so. This group could come out with a recommendation that said these should be considered in the PDP with the IGO other concerns. It could certainly perhaps go that far. It's not within its particular workload. What it's working on is a response to the GAC letter, a recommended response to the GAC's request, which was to protect the two of them, which is yes, no, sort of no, sort of yes, et cetera. I think the PDP is a separate effort. I think it'll be up to the council members to decide whether they just ask this group to write the charter for the PDP or whether another group does that. That I don't know. That's still very much in the council's hands.
Yeah, that hasn't been set up or anything.
Right, no. So it doesn't have that as a work item at this point.
So is there anything we need to do on this issue, on these special privileges? I mean, it kind of sounds like this working group is moving along and, you know.
What we need to do is respond to comment requests.
Okay. Okay, so the comment, the questions that you sent to the NCSG list,
right,
we need to provide them with feedback on that. Do they want do they want individual comments, or do they want a group position?
I think on this set, just giving me feedback is good. I can take that back with me.
Okay.
I think there'll be another set of more formalized questions that might require a constituency / stakeholder group statement. I doubt we can get a stakeholder group uniform statement on this.
Mm-hmm.
Although we could conceivably get a statement that says all the issues should be considered in the PDP,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's therefore not judging the other issues. So perhaps NCSG could come up with that sort of statement, whereas NCUC could come up with a more particular statement on what it thought about various kinds of rights, extra rights.
Okay.
You know,
right.
So I don't.
Okay.
So there may be a call in the next week. It might come out of our next meeting, which is next Monday. And as I say, because I'm in Meissen doing this whole Meissen thing, I may or may not be able to make it. I might have to skip the boat trip and dinner to go to a Red Cross and IOC meeting, and I'm just not sure I want to do that.
Ouch.
Exactly. I'm not sure that I'm that dedicated to the cause.
Red Cross would skip the boat trip to go to a meeting.
Well, I mean, but this is their main bread and butter thing. I want to see the right thing done, but my life doesn't quite revolve around the Red Cross, although for the next couple of weeks it will revolve around the Olympics.
Okay. And in the meantime, do you just want individual responses on what, you know, we just members think about the questions you sent? Is that what would be helpful to the group?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. I will type up my thoughts and send them to you, and also send out a note to the list reminding others, encouraging others to do that as well.
And as I say, there may be a more formalized group of questions coming later that then I think that would be the time to do a constituency. Now, at this point, for example, modifications on the question, et cetera. So, but I think it's not like this committee is, you know, coming close to deciding, give them everything they want.
Like when it was first formed.
Well,
that was the attitude when it was first formed.
Close attention.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Anything else on these special privileges for the Red Cross, the Olympics, and IGOs that we need to think about now? Okay. How about the URS?
The IGO stuff it's just being talked about at the moment, isn't it? It's not. There's nothing before the GNSO or anything.
I think that's what we've come to, is that it's still in the council's hands, and, you know, we're kind of expecting a group to be set up, but it hasn't happened yet. If we had some counselors on the call, we could confirm this.
Trying to get in, apparently.
Who was trying to get in?
Wolfgang just Skyped. Yeah. He's been trying to get in for 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's been trying 15 minutes and it doesn't work.
What the heck? And I know you guys had to wait a long time, too. Operator, are you on the call? We're having some difficulty getting people in the line.
Zero if she's not answering. I think it's #0 or *0 to get the operator for you.
Okay, pound.
*0, probably.
*0. Okay, am I back in the call now?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so the operator says she sees Kathy's trying to get in.
I'm here now. Hi. Thanks, everybody. It took about 10 minutes. So.
Yeah, no, everyone is having a really hard time. Wolfgang said he's been trying to get in for 15 minutes, and so I just said something to the operator about it, and she's going to try to get everyone in and make sure that this doesn't happen anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you for waiting on hold for so long to try to get in. We were just talking about the new GTLD issues and the special privileges for the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee, and it sounds like the questions that Avery sent to the list from the group are something we need to think about in the next couple of days and send our individual responses to her, and then she can take that back to the feed that back into the working group. And then
Kathy Kleinman, did she get in the call?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Oh, okay, you did. Sorry.
Thanks so much. No, I appreciate it. And can I ask a quick question? The Adobe Connect room, I'm getting into an old conference.
Oh.
I haven't been able to get into it at all. When I try, it says, you know, we're waiting for the meeting host to arrive. The meeting will start when the host arrives. And I sent a note to Gisella and Glenn saying, you know, what's up with this? How come we can't get into it? Because this happened last month. I couldn't get into the Adobe class.
Okay. Well, I'm in, and it's the last meeting. It's the very end of the last meeting. But anyway, we're here, and we're having a discussion, so that's great. Thank you.
No, thanks. Thank you for joining. So we need to send our individual thoughts on these questions that Avery sent to the list back to her, and she can feed that back into the working group. And then there'll be probably some additional questions coming out for the constituencies or the stakeholder groups to try to come to some provide some group feedback to the working groups on. Okay, so the next issue is the URS summit. And has anyone heard anything more about what staff has planned for this URS summit? Anyone know anything about this? It's been pretty tight-lipped.
This is Wolfgang, by the way. You know, I had problems calling in, but I'm now in. You know, the only thing I saw was that the WIPO has a lot of problems with this, obviously.
Yeah, I know they want us to entirely reconfigure the URS to meet their profit expectations. Because we're here for them, apparently.
This is Kathy.
Yes, Kathy.
And according to an email that was requested by Phil Corwin, and then he published parts of it, apparently ICANN asked WIPO to host the summit, which I think is a particularly bad idea. But, I mean, I think WIPO should participate because I think they have a lot they want to say, but the idea that they would host it to me seems a little crazy. But apparently they turned him down. They turned ICANN down flat unless the board agrees to a set of preconditions. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, do we know if ICANN is even looking at other providers? I mean, are they just determined to, you know, to do what the WIPO types or the, you know, these big business trademark industry types want to do? And or are they really going to try to look for somebody else who can... Does anyone know?
No, but who could be somebody else? I think the only real, let's say, acceptable alternative is probably the European Center in Prague. Because, you know, if you go to the NIF, it's not better. And I don't know whether the Asian-Pacific UDRP service provider, you know, is a good choice. So the question is, you know, is there any really alternative to the existing UDRP providers available or not? So... You know, I would go for do it in Prague because the Prague Center has, meanwhile, a good reputation. But anyhow, I don't know whether this is realistic.
Well, I wonder if this is something that we need to engage in more dialogue with the staff on and try to, you know, work with them and on figure out what they're trying to do and give them some recommendations. And, I mean, it's just all happening in this big black hole, and you know, we're told after the fact, if we're lucky.
This is Kathy. I have an idea. Was anybody on the call part of the Wednesday URF session at the ICANN meeting?
By the way, if I can interrupt for a second, I do have host on the Adobe chat, so if anybody wants in, go back to it, and I'll let you in. Sorry
cool.
for the interrupt.
Thanks. Okay, well, if no one was there for the whole thing, I can summarize what I heard. I was taping that whole day, but I came into the discussion for a few minutes, and I was very, very pleased with what I heard. You know, for anyone who doesn't know, and I'm sure you all know, I was part of the SDI group from NCUC, and I was really, really pleased to hear Mark Partridge, who's intellectual property, and John Nevitt, who at the time was registrars and is now a registry, saying, you know, telling ICANN very clearly that we have to stick with the substance of what the SDI negotiated, what the IRT negotiated, and then what the SDI edited. I also heard that from John Berryhill. It was amazing to actually hear around the table the real sense that what we negotiated was good and that we should stick with it, which leads me to think that there are still a few questions, but they're procedural in nature. Not that some people wouldn't like to open up the whole thing and re-argue the substance again, but what really seems to be happening is there's a price point that the existing dispute resolution providers aren't happy with. Either they don't think they can provide the services at that price point, or they don't think they can make enough profit, but let's assume that they can't provide the services at that price point. And John Berryhill was mentioning, as were others, something that maybe the SCI didn't make clear, which is that we envision a system of batching, that these are very fast decisions under the URF. They're either up or down. This is supposed to be quick and rapid resolution. If you have to think about it for more than 15 minutes, you're not in the right forum. You should go to the UDRP or court. And maybe my thought is that if we can limit ICANN, whether we have to do a summit or anything else, whether we can limit the review of the ICANN community to some narrow procedural issues that would make everyone feel more comfortable, and I'm serious about everyone feeling more comfortable, that we're still on a consensus system, then that might be something worthwhile, but that we have to make sure that no one reopens the substance. And God forbid we have an automatic default. The response time is virtually nil. We're going to have a whole bunch of English as a second language speakers or not speaking English at all. They're not going to understand the notices. You can't have an automatic default, and that's what WIPO really wants, and that's a substantive issue. So I say if we have to reopen it just on some narrow procedural grounds, that's okay. We'll finish it off, and we can do that, but we should restrict the scope.
Well, would you be willing to maybe get in touch with Kurt and see what he's doing on this, and you know, to try to get a better idea about how we can influence this process now?
I am now an attorney. I work for a firm. My time is owned by the firm. So I have to be honest, everybody. If we can come up with a way to help fund it, that would be great, because I think there's some administrative coordination. I think we could quickly form a coalition. But first I wanted to see if you guys agreed. If you like that approach, then I've got some further ideas of maybe what some implementation steps are. But I can't step up to lead it yet. I would need permission from the firm.
Right. Well, I'm just you know, still trying to, you know, wrap my mind around what are they doing and how can we influence this? But I think I'm leery of letting them reopen up anything at all, because I'm fear that they might say it's just going to be narrow procedural issues, and then when we get there, it's, you know, the way they define narrow procedural issues, they're very substantive. So I would worry about that. But I think that, you know, if we have no choice and there is going to be a reopening of issues, then I would say let's definitely try to propose some narrow criteria of what the scope is that can be reopened. That would be my thoughts. I don't know what others think.
David here. It seems a very odd. It seems if there's And WIPO are trying to impose conditions on ICANN for this to sort of be discussed at all, by the sounds of it, and it's trying to substantively change the policy in ways that are very odd. I don't know what's going on here, and it's very weird, it seems to me.
Yeah, we need some more information from staff. So, okay.
But I don't think it's weird. I think it's perfect. Sorry, dear. I think it's perfectly consistent with where WIPO's been this whole time. They really think they should just write the rules. They hate it when there are consensus procedures. But here, this one's interesting. This one is something we may be able – I mean, normally we're in adversarial positions, right? We fight things. But this is one we may be able to help ICANN enforce the consensus policy, because to hear the IPC and the registrars and the registries behind the consensus policy that we all negotiated, you know, that we, NCUC, led the discussion of and led, you know, me and Constantina and Robin and Wendy, you know, we were a great team and we did a good job. And to hear across the board from the GNSO support for what we did, this is a really good time to guide ICANN through the final steps. Just wanted to let you know, if WIPO wants to be adversarial, let them. This is one time we can be the good guys.
If you sound like the right person to lead this project for us.
then a quick note, and tell me if you want to blow it up. I'm tempted to go on Kickstarter and see if we can raise money to do something where we help the process. I mean,
right.
Other advocates are going online to raise money to, you know, to do things. Would anybody be morally opposed to something like that?
This is Aubrey. I'm getting confused with the whole raising funds to have arguments on ICANN. I'm also wondering, if we've already got the registries and ICC and everything, everybody fighting to keep it as it is it really best for us to keep our mouths shut and not tempt anyone to say, oh, those folks are happy with it, maybe we should think about it more? I mean, if we're really happy with it and all these guys are already defending it, why should we jump into it?
Because ICANN has questions that don't have answers, and they're looking for answers. They want to know how to wrap this up. Just like the Trademark Clearinghouse, someone has to take this through into implementation. And the temptation is to open it all up instead of just implementing it. And ICANN is clearly hitting some kind of wall where they need answers to some questions. That's where the URS summit's coming from. That's the only rational explanation for trying to have it, is they don't see a path towards implementation. Phil Corwin is bashing them for not implementing. They, you know, they've had 18 months. They haven't implemented. They're looking bad, but they've got some unanswered questions. So in order to answer those questions, we've got to figure out a path towards that.
All right. Okay. Well, it really sounds like we need to get more and on this issue and more of a dialogue with staff about what they're thinking and what their questions are and how we can help. I guess we can take it back out to the list and try to drum up some interest on the list for people to get engaged on this issue. I don't know. Does anyone else have any suggestions? Okay, because I really share those concerns about what could happen if these issues get reopened. So I want to be sure we're following this. Okay, so is there anything else on the new DTLD issues? Okay, then the next issue on the agenda is the consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. There was a letter on consumer metrics and trust to ICANN that Wendy sent to the policy committee. Let's see, what day was this? July 15th. Consumer trust, continued disagreement over the premise. So we've had a few people weigh in on the policy list saying it's a good letter, let's let's submit it as an NCSG statement. And I haven't heard anything else other than that, so I wanted to raise the issue here for the whole membership and see if anyone else had any thoughts on this.
We don't have any of the policy committee members here, do we, Ms. Stoffrey? I mean, other than you, I guess.
Yes, that's right. No, we have Wolfgang.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I think you need to call it an NCSG thing. You need the policy committee there, and you need to have included the MPOC side. I think, you know, to do an NCUC thing, David and the executive committee can decide that. I think on the NCSG discuss list, I think the policy committee has support for going ahead with it, but I really think you need to get that from the list, and I don't think you have enough of that committee here.
Not on this call, but what I'd like to suggest is sending out a note to the list, the policy committee, and saying, okay, guys, you know, we've had this letter before us for a few days now, and I've heard support for it. I haven't heard anything else. Let's make a decision, and can we send this out as an NCSG statement? So just, you know, trying to wrap that up. That would be my question. I don't know, anyone else have any thoughts?
Yeah, this is Wolfgang. You know, I really did not into depths for this issue, but, you know, when I saw the presentations also in Prague, I asked it myself, you know, where are consumer rights? We are talking only about consumer trust and consumer choice. But, you know, at least in the European Union, you know, we have clearly defined consumer rights. Consumer rights are very close to human rights. And insofar, it would make sense, you know, if we, you know, try to define what are the really the rights of the consumers. In this case, it's also the registrant. I don't know whether there's already some work done and to specify a little bit, you know, what could be the rights of consumers in this context. But just recently, you know, the Council of Europe established a new working group on consumer rights on the Internet. It's more general subject, but I think to reduce consumer trust and consumer choice, you know, destroys a little bit the balance between the service provider and the user of the services, because all is in the hand of the service provider, because he tries, you know, to offer services which build trust, and he offers the choice. So, but you have nothing in the hand of the other side of the contract.
Yeah, that's a good point, and it really isn't one that I've heard yet being discussed amongst the different conversations that ICANN is hosting on these concepts of consumer choice and consumer trust. Because it strikes me that at the end of the day, a lot of the way they're framing these issues, it's just a backdoor for more trademark protection and not truly protecting consumers or as you mentioned, human rights, individual rights. And that's definitely missing from this discussion that ICANN is encouraging. Okay, so does anyone think it would be a bad idea for me to send out the note to the list saying let's try to wrap up the decision on this, sending this letter on consumer trust that Wendy drafted as an NCSG statement, and we can wrap that up. Okay, and let's see. Anything else on this issue?
This is Aubrey again. Sorry it takes me so long to get in. I keep putting it on silent mode, and then it takes forever to get a long statement. But anyhow, is Wolfgang's content included? I don't remember. In the note that Wendy wrote. I mean, I think you sending a note is a good idea, but you may want to have Wolfgang take a look at, or Wolfgang, you want him to take a look at Wendy's statement and see whether your content is included in there, and if not, make a suggestion for how to add it.
Okay, I can do that, but to be frank, you know, I'm was a little bit confused the last couple of days, and I do not have saved the statement. If you could resend it, it would be helpful.
I'm looking at it right now, and I'll resend it. And I don't see your thoughts, your concerns included in this, and it would be great if we could include those. So I'll send this to you right now as we speak.
Robin, could you send it to everybody?
Or just
Yep, absolutely. I'll just send it to the whole NCSG list.
Cool, thanks.
Real quick.
Yeah, I was grinding coffee, so I figured I should be on.
Okay, great. Next issue on the agenda is prep for the GNSO Council meeting tomorrow, which is pretty light, a light meeting as I look at it. It doesn't look like there's any motions to be voted on, but I thought maybe we'd just go through really quickly some of the issues just so we know what to expect. Well, it looks like they're going to discuss the final election procedure, and looks like a refined version was sent to the mailing list. Page not found. Okay. So do we have any idea about who the candidates are going to be for the GNSO council chair election coming up?
I think that there are a number of questions. One is, do we support a chair for the whole council? And number two is, what about the vice chair of our house? So I think we have my understanding from the election regulation is that each house elects their own vice chair. And so that means, do we have a candidate for that? And the other one is, we have some outgoing councillors. They have a right to continue, or do we need new candidates? And my understanding is also that we have to have a list and then common elections with the NPOC. That's right, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, so it means so far, I have not seen any names. I think Bill asked me to look into the fellows of our summer school to find a good candidate from a developing country. We will do this. We start on Sunday, and after we will be there, so probably we can find one or two names as candidates from the from our group. But I think the other two questions, the vice chair and the chair, is important. My understanding was that Thomas Rickard has just a good support from our group. Is this just the support from a group or some members of our group, or of all?
Well, I haven't heard any anyone against that proposal. I've only heard support for him as a candidate. But I'm not sure he's interested, or I'm not sure he's willing to run. I think Mary's been talking with him, so maybe she would know, but I don't think she's going to call. So.
Yeah, this is Avery. I think he'd be willing to run. I think he wants to truly understand, what his chances are and all that. So he'll also be in Meissen next week, correct, Wolfgang?
Yes, yeah.
Right. So we can certainly talk to them. I think there's a lot of support for him. I think Milton was one of those who wasn't too strong, but on seeing his note about the position he's taking and recommending on the IOC Red Cross thing, that he was, no longer.
Came around.
But we'd need to certainly check with him. On the House elections, I think we're still under this alternate thing where one of the two stakeholder groups gets to recommend the candidate, and then they have to get elected with that sort of supermajority vote. So the first time we recommended Mary, the second time they recommended Wolf Ulrich. Now, the way it was sort of thought what at the beginning was that if, the other stakeholder group was happy with the work that the one had been doing, then they could easily, you know, suggest that person for another term, even if he was or she was in the other house. I don't know that we have anyone that wants to stand for it in our house. We should probably make sure that, you know, neither Wolfgang nor Joy nor who else is continuing.
Who's
the third one that's continuing? Wolfgang, Joy, and?
Wendy.
And Wendy. Whether any
right.
of those three wants the vice chair, in which case, obviously, we would put them forward. But if neither of those three wants it, then
yes.
I would see no objection to us letting Wu keep it, Wafura keep it. But then, of course, that means that they get 3 years in a row because they would get to select the following year. Now, we could negotiate with them if we wanted to, counselors, sort of saying, hey, you know, we're willing to live with, you know, Wolf Ulrich this year, but, you know, we'd like to move our selection to next year. I don't know what we want to do. But
yeah.
because also when we put together that agreement, it was only an agreement for either two or three rotations, and then we were going to re-review it. We'd have
right.
to find the text of that, but I think Wendy was the negotiator.
No, I think it was me, and but you're right that... you're right that I think it was, they were going to do it once, we were going to do it once, and then it was, you know, we'll talk about it and see if that's working for us or if it isn't working for us. So I think it this year, then, anything is possible. I don't think we've got a pre-agreed... you know, way of handling this year, and you know, frankly, if one of our three returning counselors doesn't want it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't, because you know it's a lot of work, and it's you know work for ICANN, not really work for NCSG. So, but if one of if our guys don't want it, I don't really think I would be opposed to saying, okay, will you go another year, and we'll do it next year, and then we can, you know, talk again. I don't know. That's just sort of the first suggestion off the top of my head.
I would go along with this.
Okay. All righty. Well, does anyone else have any thoughts on this, or shall we wait and hear what comes out in the council meeting tomorrow, and then maybe we can know better how to go forward.
Right, but I think you should probably check with the other two council members just to make sure that there isn't one that wants it. But then I would say, sorry again, but then I would say, you know, start talking to your council.
I bet $1 million Wendy doesn't want it.
you know, I wouldn't be surprised, or Joy. I wouldn't be surprised. However, you know,
yes.
From past occurrences,
yeah.
I think it's always a good idea to consult with people.
but anyhow, you know, if we should have this midterm strategy, and we shouldn't give it just away for nothing. So if we talk to the other house, which is okay, our understanding is that is that we are doing it on a basis of rotation. So that means he has it for 2 years, and then the next nomination. So we should get informal preference if we come with a good candidate, and probably if you know, we get three new councillors if they have an interest, or if one of these three councillors, if Wendy is re-elected or Joy is re-elected, because they can be re-elected, then it would be you know, probably make sense to encourage Wendy or Joy to do the vice chair job. But the point is here not just to say, okay, we have no interest. We say we have an interest, but because he does a good job, so we do not want to interfere into his work, and we reserve our right and your understanding that next year it's our turn.
So maybe one yeah. thing, you should be one of the negotiators with Robin on this.
That would be great.
As you're a council member,
okay.
negotiating this, you know, talk about continuing this process for another couple years, and that, you know, they get it this year and we get it next, or whatever you guys can negotiate. But since you have strong opinions on it, Wolfgang, why don't you negotiate it with Robin? I think
okay.
he's willing to share the negotiation with you, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's fair, just, you know, also to say, okay, he does a good job. We recognize this. This is part of it, that we're not always against it. So that we say, okay, he does a good job. We support him, but we reserve our rights. It's like in a soccer match, you know, when somebody is injured and then you play the ball backwards and then you expect that the other team give it back to you when the interruption has finished.
Great metaphor.
Yep.
This is Kathy. I have a question.
Yes.
We're talking about the representatives of the non-contracted party house, right?
Right.
Talking about the vice chair.
The vice chair.
Is Jeff Newman up for chair? Is he likely to proceed from vice chair to chair?
It's my understanding he wants to run.
I got called away for a second. Has anybody talked about talking with him? Because it's my understanding coming out of the registry stakeholder group a year ago that he would love to be chair. I mean, this is what he's angling for. I agree. I mean, we might, you know, whatever happens, I think we have to talk to him.
I think the part of the call that you missed was we've been talking, or at least a bunch of counselors have been talking to Thomas Rickert, as a chair nominee.
Yes, and, you know, I had also a discussion with Thomas and recently, and, you know, I can just prove what Avery has said, that he has a certain interest and he would be ready to do it if he feels that he has enough support. And so that means he just, wants to avoid to run and then to lose. So that's why, you know, that's my understanding, because why he has not yet made it public, so that he has to sort it out in the other house with Jeff Newman. I think probably this could be the situation. Jonathan probably is also running, so I have no full picture who are the candidates. In previous times, it was much easier, Chuck Gomez versus Olga Cavalli or things like that. So, but this time, it could be more complicated because they are competitors, you know, within one house.
Right, but chances are, and I have no idea, chances are they've made the same deal that we were just talking about in our house, that Stefan, again, I have no evidence of this, but that Stefan would be the chair for a while, and then if they could, they would pass it to the registries to chair, from registrars to registries.
Right.
I'm just saying that would be logical.
Right, and this is Avery again. And one of the things that's been presumed is because our house fights more than their house, that they would always be able to determine who was chair. And I think that's one of the reasons why, if we can find a NCA candidate, a neutral candidate that our house can support, then, and so it's most important for us to find if we've got alliance with people on the other side of the house. If we split our house in the vote, then the contracted parties get to keep it. Their presumption is that because our house is a house divided, as opposed to their house is really, they're the same people, you know, especially without vertical integration. They're the same people, so that they're always going to be able to hold on to the chair.
Absolutely. They really do believe that. I agree with your analysis is great, Avery. Just a quick question. If someone does talk to Jeff, one thing that, it's always good to compliment before you say, I'm sorry, we're not supporting you for chair. One of the things he has been really good at, and I'll just throw it in, and if anybody wants to mention it, feel free, is about the role of the GNSO and GNSO policy and consensus policy and not overriding it in other parts of ICANN. He's been really, really good on that, and that's something I think we generally agree with. So every time I watch him speak on that publicly, I'm like, good. I appreciate that he's doing that.
By the way, I should probably tag anything I say about Jeff with a conflict of interest statement, in that with me working for .gay LLC and Newstar being our service provider back end, I have multiple relationships with Jeff. Both the very antagonistic one we've seen in Jazz and the more cooperative one we have inside the registry.
Well, that's one of the great things about ICANN.
and one of the great things is is that we say it when it's the case.
It's true. No, I went up to Jeff in Prague after he made some comments at the microphone that similar to what Kathy was just saying, and I'm like, Jeff, you're so reasonable. How come you say things that are so reasonable 1 minute and so outrageous the next?
Very good. Did he have a good answer?
I don't remember what he said. I think he was pretty shocked, actually.
Hello?
I couldn't figure out when you meant he was unreasonable.
Well.
Well,
okay.
Sounds like a great strategy.
Yeah. All right. So we'll go back to the counselors and see how to go forward with this election. And we'll have the just as a side note, we'll have the NCSG election in September. So it'll probably be running along the same time frame.
And we need to do an UC election as well.
Yep. We should probably try to coordinate them so they're at the same time.
Yeah, that would be great.
They're different groups of people, though.
Right. But that way I only have one.
But it's a subset of the other, isn't it?
Right, one's a subset.
Yeah. But there'll be two different
groups. It would still be good to... I mean, they'll have to do separate ballots and so on. They were not the same. But it would be still good to run them at the same time so that we can do the traditional shake every supporter and try and get them, shake every member and get them to actually vote.
Yeah.
It was a combined effort.
This is Aubrey with
yep.
two ballots and some people even having, oh no, actually we got rid of anybody having two votes. But with there being two ballots and separate lists being reminded, I don't know that you don't run a risk. And this is speaking more from experience of having tried to get people to vote. You don't run a risk of people voting in one and not remembering that they have to vote for two. And you can't tell everybody that you have to vote for two. You have to give a nuanced message. And nuanced messages, when you're trying to get as much participation as possible, are really tough. So
yeah.
I would recommend that the two of you think about sequentializing them. I know that's a longer pain, but it's a better chance of getting voting. Just some advice from having lived through it too many times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God, you're just bringing back all these memories of
exactly.
getting the verb and, oh, gosh, it's so much work. Oh, God. Work. Why did we sign up for this?
And I'm not volunteering to help.
Well, you'll get drafted nonetheless. Oh, okay. So the next issue on the council agenda is the thick who is PDP. It says, as the .com agreement has now been renewed, the council may not want to wait until November before a drafting team is formed to develop a charter for the thick who is policy development process working group. So, I don't know. I mean, it looks like staff wants council to get cracking on developing who is. is that what am I reading this right? I think who is.
This is Aubrey, if I can venture a couple opinions.
Yeah.
One, this whole issue of delaying PDPs is a process issue that's open in the SCI, in the, you know, Standing Committee on Implementation Corrupt. So this has been an issue there because there's sort of no policies for delaying PDPs. So there's a constant verbal on this issue itself from the process point. I think so that's one of the reasons why they're making sure that this is not an unbounded delay, but that this is a bounded delay and this is time to start working on it. So I assume that that is the motivation for the staff saying, okay, let's start working on, you know, the charter or whatever it is that needed to be done. So that's my view on why that's happening. Not that they want thick who is now in the incumbent. It's just that there's a process issue. I have yet to go back through the the PDP and the what was actually in the PDP and what was in the issues report. And are we absolutely sure that the issue cannot be widened to, and why do we have Sick Who Is Anywhere? You know, shouldn't, I mean, but I don't know how it was written, and I've never taken the time. But we had a peremptory, you know, a board decision to apply Sick Who Is to all the new ones. And now we're looking at, you know, making my left hand like my right hand and imposing that also on the incumbent, which, of course, gathers the greatest number of people.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's reason for considering it just in terms of .com because these people didn't sign up with that sort of world in mind. But also, are we sure that the wording does not permit extension to looking at the whole issue? If we're going to talk about Sick Who Is, then since we never made a policy decision as a GNSO on Sick Who Is in new TLDs, why don't we also look at that while we're looking at it for Sick? I mean, for incumbent. But I don't know if that is allowed under the PDP that was approved.
Right.
And I haven't taken the time.
Yeah. So we need to figure this out. I haven't looked at it closely either.
Somebody needs to look at it and answer that question. If it is an open issue, if we can try to push that point and we've got an argument that can be made based on the issues report and or the PDP itself and how it's worded and what they agreed to, then I would say go for it. I wouldn't recommend trying to change the PDP at this point because that would be, you know, impossible. But if it's in there, and if that can be included as one of the work items in the charter, because it somehow can be found to be in there, that would be a good thing.
Right. How long has this group been going, do you know?
Which group?
The Who Is Policy Development Process Working Group. Oh, I guess it hasn't, because I guess it hasn't gotten gone yet, because they're just talking about developing a charter for it.
Right,
that's
where we're at the moment, on developing the charter. The SCI has been going for a while. That's the one that where this is a process issue.
Okay. All right. Well, was there anything else on this one? Sick Who Is, PDP? Okay, hearing nothing, we can go on to the next item, which is the Who Is review team.
Because
yes.
Who is bad even for some of the new GTLDs.
Right.
Right.
You sure you don't want to look into this a little further, Aubrey?
I mean, as part of my work? Yes, as part of my work, I can see how this fits into an issue as a work issue. So I will take the time to look into it and see if there's any way the wording can be used.
Sweet. Thank you.
Now I see, by agreeing to volunteer, that means I can be made to feel guilty about not doing it.
But you'll do it, so we won't get to
feel guilty.
We won't get to make you feel guilty. Because you'll do it. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay, so the next item was the Who Is Review Team final report. And the council will consider tomorrow how it should respond to the Who Is Review Team final report and the board's call for input from the GNSO. Anyone have any thoughts on the Who Is Review Team final report? Kathy, were you on that team? Was that the team you were on?
The Who Is Review Team, yeah. That was, in fact, I was thinking I should probably recuse myself from this conversation.
No, that group is over, right?
The group is over. We folded up
opinion.
In Costa Rica. I guess
I guess the board put it out for general comments. We wrapped up and presented in Costa Rica. So I guess the board's still trying to decide what to do with the report.
Is there anything in that report that you think should have been otherwise, but because you were working consensus, you couldn't push, that perhaps would be a good idea for NCUC, NCSG to look at, to perhaps even comment on?
I was representing the registries in the meeting. I know Wendy has very different views on it. The thing I'm proudest of is that the group embraced proxy privacy rights and recommended that for going forward, and that ultimately the GAC, including the U.S. GAC, came around and accepted that. On the human rights issues, I think very, very good points have been raised. One of the things that's happening now by way of background is there's some pushback from the IETF that said that the WHOIS review team hasn't gone down to kind of the nuts and bolts of what the requirements of WHOIS, what the requirements should be. We didn't tear down the protocols and say that we're working with old protocols and what the protocol requirements should be, that we didn't really review everything from the ground up. And the answer is we weren't asked to. Our starting point, per the affirmation of commitment, was to look at ICANN's existing policy. We weren't asked to redesign it. We weren't asked to live, you know, in a world that doesn't exist and say, what would we do if we could wave our magic wand and create a protocol from scratch? We were asked to look at the existing policy and see how it's being implemented, and also whether it serves the public, all the public trust, consumer trust kinds of issues, whether it serves the needs of law enforcement and consumer trust and issues like that. So I don't know if anybody wanted to, you know, to jump in and say, you know, so there is this criticism from the IETF that we didn't look at this from the ground up.
Yeah, I'm part of that same IETF WEIRDS working group. I guess I think you should have, because you could have. You could have come up with, these are the current policies, and these are the policies that should exist, and things should happen to make that possible. So that is certainly an approach I think you could have taken within your scope. And, in fact, it's, you know, one that bunches of people have been recommending for a very long time. So I guess that's unfortunate. Be that as the case, you know, it sort of makes the work of the group sort of almost, you know, past the sale date, since the whole issue of coming up with new policy imperatives for a WHOIS service have been on the table in ICANN for a couple years now. That wasn't addressed is kind of weird, you know, and perhaps the report is really just working on a problem that, or wasn't working on the right problem.
Well, again, we were working on the problem we were given, and we worked very hard to understand the scope of what we were given.
Who gives this?
Affirmation of commitments. We were organized under the affirmation of commitments.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
9.3.1.
We give the explicit, this is what your scope is, charter.
We went to the drafters and the signatories, and we said, what did you mean? We had a number of questions for them. What did you mean? What was the intent?
Right. So you asked them the question about, does the scope include what policies should be created?
We asked them what existing policy meant, what our starting point was, what they viewed our starting point was. It's really a contract. It was signed between two parties. So understanding not only what the words say to a general reader, but also what they meant to the two people who signed it, what was the intent of the signatories. And then we worked from there.
Okay, so a perspective to take is that, for whatever reason, that limited you from being able to do the job that needed to be done, which was determine what is needed in a WHOIS policy.
No, we did the job that needed to be done, which is ICANN agreed to implement its existing policy. The question was, what was it? Is it being implemented? Is there compliance? And then does it fulfill the extra needs under the affirmation of commitment?
Right. Contractually, that's true, I'm sure. it's not what needs to be done now. Fine. And that's what the IETF is saying, that you didn't do the job that needed to be done. You did the job that you were contractually bound to, you know, and that's good. I mean, what else, I guess, could you do? But that this group did not do the job that needed to be done, which was figure out what the who is policy should be, not what was possible under previous policies and were we living up to an old policy.
Well, is that something that we should be saying in the council meeting tomorrow? I mean, because it looks like the board is looking for feedback from council on this issue. We only have one counselor on the call to take this back to council.
In other words, the easiest way of putting it is that whether it's true or not, I mean, we'd have to determine if it's true, is that there's a certain degree of support for the IETF's perspective on the work of, you know, the Who Is team, and that while they completed the work in their contract, you know, they did not do a job that needs to be done, which is determine what the policy should be, you know. But I don't know whether the council member wants to say that.
Well, I think that would be pretty helpful, actually. I mean, I know sometimes I get pretty frustrated when ICANN sort of tries to limit the choices of what I'm allowed to say by telling me by telling me the scope of what I'm allowed to say. So I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a point that really should be made in the council meeting tomorrow. Wolf, is it something that you feel comfortable being able to take back to the council?
Why not?
And you know, I'm sure Wendy will have some thoughts on this as well, and it's just too bad she's not on today's call.
Wendy is head of position, but so that's not my issue number one.
Yeah. Although, actually, now that I think about it, I'm not sure she's going to be able to be at the council meeting tomorrow. We've got a few councilors who aren't going to be able to make the meeting.
Okay, so I will take this to my portfolio.
Thank you. Okay, so the next issue that was on the council agenda was defensive registrations and thinking about maybe doing a PDP on defensive registrations in conjunction with the IGO Red Cross special privileges request. I don't think there's been much work has been done at all. I think just the briefing paper from staff, but, you know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, if there's been a bunch of work that's been done on defensive registrations. Okay.
You know, let me make just a very brief comment. You know, this, you know, there's a growing confusion about, you know, what should be here done with the future of the working group or drafting team or whatever it is. Because, you know, we are duplicating work which has been done already. So it means, in my eyes, like on the first level, we have for the second level, we have already, you know, a lot of procedures and mechanisms in place which prevent registrations, you know, which can be seen as illegal or misuse or what else. So the list which was provided by the IOC with around 2,000 different second level registrations, you know, did work against them because, you know, a lot of the registrations were legal and, you know, then you have to go through the procedure which is there, you know, to stop the registration. So, but I cannot see how we can introduce, you know, more defensive mechanisms. And so insofar also defensive registrations, you know, with regard to the Red Cross and IOC list and probably dozen other organizations or acronyms or whatever. So I'm confused. So my personal approach is, you know, we should strengthen the existing mechanism to look whether there are deficiencies in the mechanisms or to look for cases where it didn't work and then to try to repair it, but not to introduce additional new mechanism for a very small number of individual cases, you know, which are not so very individual and so different from other cases of applicants or other groups, you know, which are still sleepy, and if they, you know, wake up, they will ask for the same thing what the IOC and the Red Cross is doing.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with that. You know, this to me personally, this initiative on defensive registrations and the special privileges for the IGOs and the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee and all of these issues are just, you know, rehashing policy issues that were already decided 3, 4, 5 years ago. I mean, there were working groups on reserve names where they said no to the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee. And, you know, they come back 5 years later just as on the eve of the policy's implementation and try to get it changed. And, you know, and that's what we're seeing here with this defensive registrations issue, too. I mean, it's just the trademark lobby once again being upset that they're going to have to, or they think they're going to have to register more domains. And trying to get new protections, new rules, changing the agreed upon consensus policies that we've already had. So, you know, I think that the burden really needs to be put on anyone, and it's a high burden to show what is it about the existing policies and the existing mechanisms that ICANN has come up with over the last, you know, 6 years. How are they inadequate? How are they not meeting these needs? And, you know, nobody's trying to show that. We're just hearing requests for, oh, I need special rights. Oh, well, if they get them, I get them too. And, oh, I want them too. And, you know, the can of worms that opens by starting to go down that path, I mean, we just don't want to invite that. I mean, that's just my personal view on this issue.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Did anyone else have anything on defensive registrations?
This is Kathy. I agree with you completely.
Great. Thank you.
And NCUC has done an amazing job in this area. And thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so then the next issue on the council agenda is fake renewal notices. The GNSO council requested a small group prepare. What is this? I guess this drafting team submitted a report to the council in Costa Rica and then put it out for comment. Okay, so what are we going to do here? I guess there's just going to be a presentation from Mikey O'Connor on the updated fake renewals notices report. I don't think this is really too big of an issue. It's only 10 minutes on the agenda. Is there anything we need to pay attention to this?
Yes, maybe. I haven't read it, but this is Kathy. It seems to be linked with Open Who Is information because the expiration date is there on the Who Is record. And that's where the fake renewal notices are coming from. That's at least one source. You know, the main source is the Who Is information. So if there's a push to, you know, this may link back to what the Who Is review team said and also what Avery's saying in the bigger picture. But, you know, if there's a push, and again, I haven't read the report from, you know, Mikey's group, if there's a push to make information private, that might be something we want to support.
Okay, great. Well, it looks like we'll get a presentation of this report, or council will get a presentation of it tomorrow, and so we should be paying attention to it and seeing if we can find something along those lines.
Right, that's Avery, and possibly even, you know, ask whether, you know, that is an issue, and if it isn't mentioned in his report, then just someone ask about, you know, it. as a related issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Since this is the asking stage.
Right. Okay. If there's nothing else on that issue, the last issue on the agenda was a substantive issue, I'll say, on the GNSO Council agenda is the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group final report. And so the Council is just going to discuss the next steps and review the report, determine how the Council wishes to review the report. Okay. Did anyone have anything on this issue, the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group final report?
Yeah, just a point. I think, I'm not sure if this is what's being discussed. I was in that group, and it was a joint group with ESSAC, and I think ESSAC is making a comment, and correct me if I'm wrong because I haven't looked at this time's agenda, was making a point that, okay, yeah, we agreed that work should be done, and now what should we do next? Because there's a bunch of things in that report that discuss ongoing efforts, one of them being, you know, defining what internationally named records model would be. So I don't know to what respect what the GNSO Council talking tomorrow relates to that kind of process. So I'd be curious to find out.
Yeah.
Or I could read more, but I'm not gonna.
Well, it means, what is your recommendation? Just to say yes or? Because there will be probably a vote.
Yeah. No, I don't think you have a vote tomorrow. But I think continuing to work with ESSAC on these issues is a good idea,
okay,
in general.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I agree with necessarily every issue, every task, and that's a different level. But in general, yeah, let's keep working with ESSAC.
Okay.
If that comes up as a question.
Okay.
That is, by the way, one working group. That one and JIG are both community wide working groups, or whatever we're calling them, cross-community working groups, that actually went very well. It was more dynamic than the JIG is, but it you know, both of those are two examples where it kind of works. Actually, with the ESSAC, it really did work.
Good to hear.
Okay, was there anything else on this final report working group? Okay, well, that's the last substantive issue on the council agenda, so I think we've got a little bit of an understanding of what to expect tomorrow on tomorrow's
call. The IDN one, if I can.
Please.
I'm sorry I didn't get there in time, and sorry I interrupted.
No.
We have to, and this is one where I'm conflicted. I'm not conflicted.gay, but I'm conflicted.ietf. In that, from the IETF perspective, there's a notion of making sure that all the data you want there is there. And from the privacy aspect, there's wanting to make sure that for every bit of the data that is there, there's a way of, you know, very much restricting access to it. And making sure that both of those mechanisms are always there and always adequate and always often a model that allows for the privacy you need is always a question to be asked, because developing that protocol notion of privacy and what it means to define that capability into the protocol is a sort of still newish but very active item of discussion at the IETF. So making sure we don't ignore it at the policy level whenever we come together, and the IDN is a place where a lot of that will show up. So when people start working on models of how you represent the data and how you represent the access, to that data that we're paying attention.
Right.
Robin, is this going to be on that?
Yes, please.
Okay. To kind of map what Avery said into the WHOIS review team and the existing policy, the IETF is trying to take it back down. We're already running with policy and code and protocol, and happened for a long time in the ICANN world. So to map that, rather, again, the WHOIS review team embraced the proxy privacy services, that these have grown up out of a need for them, and that they serve three distinct communities. One is commercial, two is non-commercial, and three is individual. That it's not just a natural person's right, but again, commercial, non-commercial, and individual. And so as these issues come up in IDNs, the privacy and proxy services, the intent is that they'll be expanded into the IDN communities and to serve them, and that some of them will be local and be operating for their own communities. So we should think about it not just for protocols that may exist, but for protocols that do exist.
Well, I think this is Aubrey again. I think that's always being taken into account. And what is in effect here is what protocols do the proxy users have to access the information that's there. In some cases, they hold the information, and in some cases, others hold the information and such. So the two are interrelated, is what I'm saying.
Agreed. They are interrelated.
Okay. Was there anything else on that?
No, sorry for the interruption.
No, that's perfect. That's fine. And while we're on completely unrelated topics, I actually have a question. Kathy, if I can ask you, do you remember the name of the privacy commissioner from Canada who was going to participate at the conference you put together in Vancouver? Do you remember the name of the Canadian privacy?
Her name was Stephanie Perrin. She was director of policy for the then privacy commissioner. She is no longer there. She's in private or non-commercial practice right now.
She's in private practice now?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I knew you'd remember her name. Thank you.
No, she's great. It's Perrin, Perrin. And she's terrific. She's still working in the privacy arena.
I ask because we're talking about putting together a debate between a privacy commissioner or privacy official type and law enforcement in Toronto, a one-on-one debate, and so I thought maybe she would have been a good privacy official, somebody from Canada. If you got any ideas or suggestions for who would be good for that, let me know.
Germany. Germany is amazing. Is generally, you know, the strongest on data protection. So if you want kind of the most vivid debate, I'd go with the German Data Protection Commissioner. Have we gotten any answers back to our letter? I apologize if I missed that earlier in the discussion. Any letters back to the letter that went out to the Data Protection Commissioner?
Well, we're not entirely sure it's gone out to it's gone out yet.
Okay.
So, I need to follow up on the list and, you know, make sure that the letter actually goes out.
Okay, because that's on a fast track. That's for the law enforcement negotiations, right?
Exactly. I mean, Rob told us we don't have a lot of time. That letter needs to be sent.
And everybody's about to go on vacation if they're not already. Okay. Cool. Thanks. Thanks for the follow-up on that.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. Okay, so that was it for our agenda today, guys. Did anyone have anything else they wanted to add while we're just sort of thinking up questions that we wanted to ask each other?
How many of us are on the call still? Is it just three or four? I know I'm here. I know Kathy's here. I know Robin's here. Is David still here? He hasn't said much in a while, and it is late.
No. Yep, I'm still here.
You're
I've
still
been
there.
Muted for a bit, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, and nobody. It doesn't look like anybody else joined, according to the meeting view.
Oh, that's right. You've got that. Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really, you know, crazy. So I waited 15 minutes before, you know, I got the permission to enter the conference room. I don't know. Normally it goes quick. So anyhow, it worked. So and it's fine. By the way, tomorrow the call is at 11 UTC. Is this correct?
Let me take a look here.
Yeah,
11 UTC tomorrow, right? Yeah, I'll let Aiken know that we had problems with the service provider this time, that several folks were not able to get in the call, or it took 10-15 minutes, so they might want to know that was a problem.
Right, and some might have been discouraged after a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just the people who said, hey, it took me 10 or 15 minutes. A lot of people probably hung up after 5.
Right. What? Doesn't work. Oh, well, I tried.
So, okay. All right, but thank you all for participating. I really do appreciate it. And and I guess we will meet online.
Yep.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the instructions for tomorrow's meeting. Thanks.
And I'll probably be online during the meeting. And see you on Sunday, Wolfgang.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for being at tomorrow's meeting, Wolfgang and Aubrey. That's great. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.